White supremacists often use the terms Nordic and master race in their efforts to denigrate African Americans and other ethnic groups. In the days leading up to the signing of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, a group of segregationists in Mississippi formed an organization. They called it the Coordinating Committee for Fundamental American Freedoms. The organization's goal was to create a movement of mass resistance to desegregation. In short order, the CCFAF raised an astounding $250,000 for the cause.
The CCFAF claimed that the money, quote, represented donations from all over the United States, when, in fact, the great majority of it came from a wealthy New England textile multimillionaire named Wycliffe Draper. Of the $250,000, about $220,000 came directly out of Draper's pocket.
That's William Tucker. He's written a book about Draper and his attempts to affect public discourse on issues of race. Draper believed black Americans to be intellectually inferior to whites. So in 1937, he created the Pioneer Fund, a foundation to support scientific research that would back up his theory. Believe it or not, Draper's Pioneer Fund is still around. And as William Tucker explains, it continues to carry out the vision of its now deceased benefactor.
He was a very reclusive person, and so I can shed a little light on his personal motivation.
Yeah.
I can say that coming of age as he did back in the teens and 20s, he was attracted to the sort of pseudoscientific racial ideology that underlay policy in the Third Reich.
Hmm.
And so he had a number of connections in Nazi Germany and still seemed to believe in the theories that informed Nazi policy long after the Third Reich was gone, that is, for the rest of his life until he died in 1972.
How did the Pioneer Fund then react to the civil rights movement? How was it used during that?
Well, that's very interesting because the fund itself did not support a lot of projects during the civil rights era. And I think this was a conscious attempt on Draper's part to make sure that his initiatives kind of stayed out of the public light so that the usual reporting requirements for somebody like the Pioneer Fund would not be effective in this case. Instead, the exact same people who were Pioneer's board of directors, using Draper's money, which of course is also what funded Pioneer, took this series of steps during the civil rights movement to fund the resistance, and not just the resistance in general, but a very specific arm of the resistance that used science as its major point of argument, so that one project after another that distributed these pamphlets claiming that the reason that the civil rights movement couldn't succeed was because blacks were intellectually inferior or genetically inferior to whites, one project after another of this sort was funded by Draper. And this culminated in the huge amount of money he gave to this organization centered in Mississippi that was specifically created in order to oppose the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
You know, it's very interesting because you talked about how reclusive that Draper was. And as I read this book and was looking at all of the examples you gave, I was wondering how you were able to conduct your investigation.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I began this project by making a list of all the scientists I could think of who were active in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, who had what I felt were really racist opinions. And then, fortunately, you know, there's so much available online now, then I looked to see if any of them left an archive of personal correspondence. Then I traveled around the country to these archives, and I thought to myself, well, a couple of these trips will be in vain. That is, I'm going to strike out a couple of times. In fact, every single racist scientist who left any correspondence at all had connections to Draper. And so, you know, from these archival records, from these behind-the-scenes letters, I was able to put together the story of what, in fact, Draper and his money actually did.
Well, you know, we're talking about the history of this man, and as you mentioned, he died several years ago in 1972. But the fund itself continued, the Pioneer Fund, and what is it doing now?
Well, when Draper died, the fund was taken over by Draper's attorney, Harry Weyer. Wire was a North Carolina resident originally who moved up to New York, but always kept his hand involved in North Carolina politics and was one of the three people, one of the triumvirate behind the Jesse Helms machine. And Wire now took over Draper's finances as well as control of the Pioneer Fund and now doled out money for the same purpose that Draper had, perhaps not so much to projects overtly opposed to civil rights, because by 1972 the verdict was in that the civil rights movement had been victorious, but certainly to projects that still had that spirit, if not quite as overt. Pioneer has always had this dual path. That is, on the one hand, they fund some research that one could claim has a certain degree of academic respectability, and on the other hand, they also fund a lot of projects that are of interest to only far right-wing groups, to extremists, to neo-Nazis, and whenever they're challenged, they point to the former group as their political coverage for the latter. I mean, it's true that they have funded some projects that have produced some things of moderate scientific interest, but that, to me, has always been just the window dressing in order behind which hides the true agenda.
How do people actually get a grant from the Pioneer Fund?
Yeah, I was curious about that myself when I first began. So before I really did any research, before I discovered the archival records, I wrote to Pioneer and asked about, you know, how is it if I were interested, how would I get a grant? And they said, well, there is no application, no formal application process, and there's no form of any kind. Instead, you just write us a couple of paragraphs and tell us what your project is about, and we'll get back to you right away to let you know whether, in fact, we would be interested or not.
Hmm. I was wondering what you took away from this research. What did you take away?
Well, of course, the attempt to influence policy has long since failed. What I took away is that over the years, however, one person with a huge amount of money and willing to focus it laser-like on specific issues can really do a lot of damage in the public arena. That is, can really muddy the waters of public discourse and fund an awful lot of people with fairly hateful opinions. That's one thing I took away. But the second thing is that this sort of discourse does not have the degree of public attention that it once did, but it still exists. It's still going on kind of behind the scenes in a less overt fashion, but it still exists.
William Tucker is a professor of psychology at Rutgers University. His book, The Funding of Scientific Racism, is out now in paperback. Thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure talking to you.